This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, Sharp Money, VSIN, the sports betting network. It's time to talk to our longtime partner, Thomas Gable Borgata, director of race and sportsbook operations over there. You can find him on Twitter at @TGableSports. And as we say hi to Thomas Gable, well, first off, hi, hope you're doing well. And secondly, we had a competitive Palm versus the big guy on Wednesday. Now, Dustin picked up the W. I thought it was a great performance by him. But you did text me. It was an odd approach from Mike Palm invoking childhood cancer into the mix. That was a rough one.
It really was, and it kind of tied your hands. I felt for you with that, Patrick, because Dustin gave a great answer, and as you said, he had a great overall performance. But as soon as listening to that, you know, all right, Dustin gives a great answer, and then Palm all of a sudden comes over to top talking about childhood cancer, and what do you do with that as a judge? You can't give that to Dustin. You can't turn your back on kids with cancer.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure Mike knew exactly what he was doing with that.
Oh, yes.
I'm just surprised. I'm just surprised that entered into the conversation, into the debate on Wednesday. But I guess it's something Dustin needs to be aware of in the future.
No, and Palm will play dirty in a lot of ways in life, but look, we were talking about traditions in college football, and he brought up Iowa with waving to the kids with cancer. That put me in a tough spot. My hands were tied. He won that battle.
Yep.
Okay. Look, it's a big weekend because of week zero, which we'll get to, but something else is happening tomorrow at the Traverse in Saratoga, and Torpedo Anna, who could be a historical filly running against the boys, Thomas. I'm fired up for this.
It's going to be a great race, and a lot of excitement here for it. You know, you have Fierceness going, Doorknock. I mean, you have a lot of great horses in it, and I'm really hoping that it's a great race, a great betting race, as it should be. And I mean, this is it. This is kind of the culmination. Well, it's not the last weekend for Saratoga, but it's kind of the culmination of everything and of the summer racing season tomorrow. And you have some great meets and some great race days through the summer at different tracks throughout the country, but this is obviously the big one. So outside of the Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup, this is it.
Yep, no, you just nailed it. It's amazing. And we give horse racing a lot of flack sometimes, but you know, McPeak running the filly and the connections running the filly against, let's be honest, he's Doorknock, Sierra Leone, and Fierceness. Those are three really good horses. This is a very good field.
Yes, it is. Tremendous field, and I'm hoping that the race sets up as a great betting race as well. So really looking forward to it.
Now, I texted you the other day because there had been some movement in that Florida State-Georgia Tech game in Dublin tomorrow to kick off week zero. You know, a book like DraftKings had gotten all the way down to 10. Where did you open Florida State as a favorite, and where are you sitting now?
So Florida State opened 13.5. We're sitting 10.5 right now. We never got as low as 10. And I was interested to see how low this was going to go in the market. I if 10s pop, they're not going to last long. I certainly would expect a lot of money coming in on Florida State if you could lay the 10. So, you know, I think most places right now 10.5, and I'm a little surprised at the line move. I'm not going to lie. I mean, Georgia Tech was not a good team last year, let's be honest. I mean, their highlight was essentially that game that Crystal Ball handed them. That was the highlight of their season. And, you know, I think Florida State's offensive line should certainly be able to push them around. I think they should be able to get whatever they want on the ground tomorrow. So it's just a question of whether this line has fallen a little bit too far. And 10 is obviously certainly a resistance point there and a key number as it should be. But and let's be honest, when you look at this game, this is really the whole week zero card. This is really the only real game that's going tomorrow. The other three games that are going to be on the board are rather lackluster for college football fans, for sure. And this one's probably going to be the only interesting game of the day in my mind. You have an FCS team there in Montana State, double digits favorite, almost two touchdown favorites now over New Mexico, who's definitely one of the worst teams in the FBS. You have SMU laying a ridiculous number against a very bad Nevada team. And then you have Hawaii, who's open as a 38.5 point favorite, and now they're up to 40.5. So, I mean, these games are not going to be competitive outside of hopefully this Florida State and Georgia Tech game tomorrow. So, I'm hoping at least for a good game there at noon local time, kickoff here. So, because the other games, I think, are pretty much going to be blowouts.
Yeah, lackluster. We can certainly bet them. I'll be curious to see, Thomas, as more money comes into the market tomorrow, if we close closer to 12.5. Again, like you said, the resistance at 10 with Florida State, I think that number might drive up a little tomorrow.
I would agree. I would agree with that. I don't think this closes 10.5. I think if you really like Florida State here, this is probably your opportunity to get them now. And if you wait, you're probably going to be laying a bigger number than 10.5 tomorrow.
Yep, I would agree. The preseason. So a bit of a correction on the totals as far as the unders yesterday with, I believe, two overs. But we have seen a bit of a correlation with the dogs and the unders hitting. Has the handle at the Borgata been pretty good?
For the preseason, it's been decent. Limits are lower. But for the amount that you're writing, it's good. And, three more games we have tonight with Jacksonville now up to 7.5 point favorites over Atlanta. And just as an aside, can I ask you a question here? If you're Atlanta and you have Kirk Cousins as your quarterback one, who hasn't seen any action in the preseason, and I get it, he's coming off of a severe injury, aging quarterback coming off a severe injury, but you have your first round draft pick in Michael Penix, and again, there's some injury history there in college, but you've now shut him down for the preseason, saying that you've seen enough. If you're the Falcons, do you not feel a little uncomfortable going into the regular season with Cousins? If something, God forbid, should happen to him, now you do have to throw Penix in there, and you've only seen a little bit of him in the preseason and as a rookie. I mean, I just didn't understand that, the logic behind shutting him down here and not letting him see any action in tonight's game.
If I could throw a conspiracy theory, Dustin and I have been kind of tossing this around. Cousins is, what, 35, 36? He was injured in, I believe, week 9 last year. Sometimes that takes a year to heal. The reports are maybe he's good. I think conspiracy theory-wise, I don't know if Cousins is going to be good to go, and that's why they're wrapping up Penix.
Oh, okay, and that's fair. So maybe he's not good to go. But again, wouldn't you want? Maybe they've seen all that they need to in practice from him, I guess, at this point, and you don't need to get him any more reps in the preseason, and they've seen enough from him in practice. So, if that is the case with that, I don't know. It was just a little head scratching for me.
No, I agree. It is weird.
Last week.
Yeah, I tend to be, people get frustrated with me. I tend to be along the McVay approach. The scrimmages have become so much more vital. I wouldn't do anything in the preseason. I wouldn't risk it. What's the point?
I get it. So you're not of the Andy Reid school of thinking and put Mahomes out there for a half. Okay.
And I feel like you're an old school guy. So you're like, hey, get off my lawn. Nobody gets a participation trophy. You want to start everybody every snap of the preseason.
No, not every snap. But I would like to see, and listen, there's been a number of QB1s that we haven't seen take one snap in the preseason. And I get, this is going to be a conversation then come week one, right? If somebody does not look good in week one for the QB1s, and that guy has not played in the preseason, I guarantee you that is going to be a talking point come Monday morning.
Yes.
After week one.
That is, it's the same thing every year. We talk about the preseason. Yep. Pros come on the show and they say, great time to profit. I know a lot of pros have been getting their ass kicked this year in the preseason. And then we get past the preseason and we're like, oh, good, finally some real games. It's the same conversation every year.
Yeah, essentially. And you're right. And I'll tell you what, I mean, the certainly guys who are just kind of betting line moves and so forth, you have lost money this preseason so far. There's no doubt.
Oh, yeah. If you're steam chasing, you've been getting it handed to you in the preseason. There's no doubt about that.
100%.
Well, listen, you've got, maybe I should say you're welcome because you got some California weather with no humidity and some nice temperatures in Jersey. So I know you're going to have a busy weekend, but try to get outside and enjoy that weather a little bit.
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I always think of you when the weather's like this in Jersey. I'm like, this is what Patrick enjoys 365 days a year. So,
thank you very much, Thomas Gable, the Borgata Race and Sportsbook Director. It's the best property there in Atlantic City or on the East Coast in particular. TG, have a good weekend. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay. There he goes, Thomas Gable. That's my guy. And speaking of the preseason, you can still bet it. And we're going to bet it. And we're going to come back and continue to run the board. We left off 121, Pittsburgh and Detroit. That's an interesting one. Shout to Dustin's a huge Russell Wilson guy. So it'll be interesting to hear his cap coming up next. Okay, Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network on a Friday. We're just kind of ripping through the show today. We've got a lot to do. We've got Trevor Maddich, ESPN, coming up in about 12 minutes. Mike Somich is going to stop. A little double dip for Somich, as I believe he was hanging out with our friend Stormy earlier today. So VSiN host Mike Somich stops by. Now, his favorite hour of the week, and he does do his own show Saturdays and Sundays, but you can ask him, hook him up to a lie detector test. His favorite hour is here on the program. And that's facts. Now, Dustin Sweetelson, maybe a little sensitive today. You never know, but he's hanging out at the D in downtown Las Vegas. Royal Blue never looked so good. It is a tremendous look for you, and I just want to say that.
Yeah, the shirt was on sale. That's how it ended up in my closet.
Speaking of clothing, our new executive vice president, and he likes to get down on the ponies. Don't let him tell you differently. Oh, he's a big Raiders fan, too. He just saw Steve Cohen.
Yeah.
He just bought a Gardner Minshew jersey.
Oh.
And speaking of clothing, I had a meeting with him on Monday, and I believe the first thing he said to me is, do you own 3 shirts? Thinking he's calling me out. For those of you that are listening on the radio, that is indeed the case. So he was trying to clown me. Do you own just 3 shirts? And I thought he was complimenting me, like calling me Bill Gates or, Steve Jobs. And I said, yeah, that's factual. It leaves decisions out of it. These are long sleeves. Shout to Len Mead. Said I had to wear long sleeves. The long sleeves, very just basic with the buttons. It's just clean.
I think you look professional.
Clean.
What, are you going to walk around your own home in a blazer? Like, what are we talking about here?
He had to jump into another part of the conversation after I shut him down with thank you.
Well, I'm glad you brought him up because he and I did have an interesting conversation earlier today where I said, it's football Friday. Aren't you excited? And he said, it's not really football. And I said, it's week 0. He said, those games don't matter. Hold on. I think we all need to grow up if we're not acknowledging week 0. Is the money going to leave my account and go onto these teams and bets? And is that money then going to possibly return to the account? Then yes, these games count. Yes, they matter. They're playing them. We're betting on them. It's a big weekend for football.
To be fair to Cohen, he only cares about the Traverse tomorrow. And there's a better chance of him pounding a Coke Zero than watching week 0.
Coke Zero is better than Diet Coke.
Take it easy.
Just don't say it.
Pittsburgh, Detroit. So Pittsburgh, and this should be clear to you at this point as to why Pittsburgh's laying as much as a touchdown. So 7 mostly across the market. Right now, DraftKings is showing 6.5 if you want to get down on Pittsburgh. And the total is 35.5. But this one's pretty clear. Mike Tomlin has already said publicly he is using this game as the dress rehearsal So he's going to play Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, we played the clip from him yesterday. Want to see market improvement on offense. Needs to play. And Justin Fields, of course. The last time I saw Justin, here's the problem with Justin Fields. He is a remarkable talent. And oftentimes when Fields in Chicago would play the Lions, I know this may sound a little confusing, but he scared me. So there's something there. But I've decided he simply can't read a defense.
No. I don't even think he tries to. I think he's so quick to rely on his own ability that the second anything doesn't look right to him, he doesn't try to read the defense. He just takes off. I agree with that.
But there is a little something there because he is somebody you're like, uh-oh, this dude's going to make something happen when he's playing your team.
No, I agree. But I think that's why this is a true quarterback battle, because on one end you have someone in Russell Wilson who doesn't look like he can move the ball down the field against any defense. I mean, a bad defense even, where at least with Fields, there's an upside that when these plays break down, when there's some sort of craziness, he does have the arm strength and the legs to make anything happen offensively, where I don't know if the basics are even there for Russ anymore.
The other side of the football, and this is why I'm taking the 7 with the Detroit Lions. Remember, they went to the Chiefs and beat them. Ever heard of a guy named Hendon Hooker? And then I'm also going to throw in my guy, Nate Sudfeld, who looked freaking awesome. They combined for 342 passing yards on 42 attempts. So they were slanging that thing, and I'll take the 7 here.
I think you have to take the 7. This Steeler offense had 219 of total yards against Buffalo. 5 drives for Russell Wilson, 0 touchdowns. Justin Fields was 11 of 17 for 92 yards, but they're not scoring points. Lost 20-12 to Houston, 9-3 to Buffalo. The only way you can bet this is to take those points where Hendon Hooker is in an actual battle with Nate Sudfeld, surprisingly, for that QB2 job in Detroit. And by the way, I still buy into the Hendon Hooker being someone who develops into an NFL starter. I may be a donk. I may be wrong on that. But I'm getting vibes that if Jared Goff were to go down, Hendon Hooker would step in and everything would be the same.
Yeah, no. They love him in Detroit. They really do. And he's learning a lot from Goff. Goff apparently is a good kid. The one thing I will say, and you've been on these backup quarterbacks with the Adrian Martinez love. So we'll take the 7. That getting 7 against that Pittsburgh offense right now is sweeter than a Sidney Sweeney thirst trap. You understand? So, Dustin, I wanted to bring up J-Mo. Jameson Williams. Detroit's offense could be the greatest show on turf. And there's a reason. The first 13 weeks, they're playing on turf. However, the offense, because of what J-Mo has done in the offseason, and he's the fastest player on that team, he is such a threat to take the top off of defense. And even the way he's looked in camp, like, there is such a just concerted dedication from J-Mo. And you mix him up with the rest of them. Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be fine. Penei Sewell, there was a scare, is going to be fine. I'm not even doing shtick. It's not about an NFC championship game. This is Super Bowl or bust, and we're talking about the Detroit Lions. Now, I understand that people have gotten on board with the Detroit Lions and starting to D-ride, which is fine, and that's literally and figuratively with the D, double entendre, thank you.
Gotcha.
They're D-riding the Detroit Lions. You know, you have your good afternoon footballs, like all of a sudden, like, man, I feel like Detroit's going to do something this year. They were in the NFC Championship game last year with a chance to win in San Francisco. He might be a little late to the party, pretending like it's cool to like the Detroit Lions at this point. I'll do you a solid. For those of you donks that are just now hopping on the Honolulu Blue, do yourself a favor. Go watch the Barry Sanders documentary on Amazon Prime, and you get a feel for what it's like to be a Detroit Lions fan and the ineptitude. And so we're just not accepting Rezzies on the train. It's going to turn into an Agatha Christie situation, because I'm going to start murdering people if they don't step off that train. You wouldn't understand the reference because you're not into literature.
Yeah, Agatha Christie, it's a murder mystery. There was one on an island that I had to read in sixth grade. I can't remember what it was.
Orient Express is what I'm talking about, but Fair enough.
Here's what I'd say. You know how I know you're new to jumping on the Lions bandwagon? You just love them. You haven't been through what this man's been through. This man has been beaten down in life. There are aspects of his life that have been ruined because he decided to wake up and be a Lions fan when he was a child. So that's what I would say. But do you know how I know the Lions are going to be amazing this year? There has been no shtick out of Dan Campbell for months. All he's doing is talking straight football. Now, he was building the culture for years. We heard a lot of biting kneecaps and all these analogies to things outside of football, and we're going to be tough, we're going to represent this city. All he's simply talking about when he meets with the media now is ball. Players he's high on, work they need to do, the goals in front of them. There is no more shtick. That lets me know everything is in place for this to be a special year. I'm going to bet them to win the Super Bowl at 10-1.
I would agree with you, actually, about the lack of shtick from him, because I think he's tired of being known as the shtick guy.
Great.
And he also, and not saying this to be cute, but he's a disaster as an in-game manager. So I think he's trying to focus and not be, hey, I'm just that shticky guy, because he needs to focus and become a better in-game manager.
Well, I think
he begged to give away games, including Dallas last year.
Yeah, so I think a lot of that motivating and getting the guys on board with mantras and visualization, like, I think all of that is great to get the culture in place, but now it's about results. Because it's all in place, it's all well-oiled machine, everyone knows their role, everyone knows what they're doing. A lot of continuity on this roster, by the way. They've only had to add, like, specific spots, like corner, where they had a need, right? And the O-line is set. They know they have a quarterback. They have two running backs. They have a special group at receiver. They have an elite tight end. The defense got patched up in the offseason with a couple pieces here and there. So it's like, all right, it's put up or shut up time. Is this all going to work? We have to take it to the next level. And that's what they're doing this year.
Yeah, Reeder and Davenport on the front. You won't bet $1,000 on Detroit to win the Super Bowl.
You're right, I won't.
Why?
I'd rather
just
spread that
out. Talking about how bullish you are.
I'll do $100 on them to win the Super Bowl, and I'll come back in week three.
Honolulu blue and silver. Shout out to Wayne Fonts and Daryl Rogers and Bobby Ross and Marty Morningweg. The bar is high. Trevor Maddich next. Okay, it's very comforting, and you know it's fall when you look up at your TV and you see Trevor Maddich on ESPN talking about college football. And he's one of the best to do it, the hardest working man in pro football, BYU, onto the NFL, of course, ESPN. And we say hi to Trevor Maddich. Hi, Trevor. Thank you. And I want to start here just because we're going to kick off week zero in Ireland with Florida State and Georgia Tech. It's interesting. There's been some line movement, and Georgia Tech, maybe there's some buzz on a team that's returning eight starters, but really the conversation is about Florida State and DJU taking over at quarterback. I'll start with Florida State. Where are you on this team right now?
Yeah, Patrick, I'm high on the defense, and I am not so high on the offense yet. And the reason is, I don't know what to think of DJ Uiagalelei at quarterback. You know, he began his career at Clemson, transferred to Oregon State, and then just came to be the Florida State starting quarterback. And, you know, the offensive line for Florida State will be one of the best in the ACC, if not one of the best in the country. I mean, they should be more than solid there. They have a deep stable of running backs, versatile running backs. And so I think the running game is going to be fantastic for Florida State right out of the gate. The question is that passing game, because they lost their top three receivers, including household names like Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson, guys that could go up and get the ball even when they were covered. You just throw it up and they'll go up and get it. Well, they've got talented wide receivers, some of their own young guys from transfers. But they've got to develop chemistry with DJ Uiagalelei. And DJ at Oregon State last year completed 57% of his passes, 57. Now, he had a pretty nice average for that. He averaged about 8.5. They were throwing the ball down the field a bit on play action pass there. But everything was relatively simplified, because people just couldn't stop the Oregon State running game, so there was a lot of play action available for him. He still didn't complete as high a percentage as I thought he should have. And coming now to Florida State, how will he be? because you know Georgia Tech is going to do everything they can to gum up the running lanes and force DJU to beat them. You know, to the degree to which they can do that on defense, Georgia Tech, we'll see. But I'm high on the Florida State defense, and I am holding judgment on the Florida State offense until I see exactly who DJU is going to be.
I think that's fair. I am really excited to talk to you about the Big Ten. In particular, Ohio State, and we're talking to Trevor Maddich, of course, ESPN, Ohio State and Oregon. Here's why. I don't know if Urban Meyer is being passive, Trevor, but he will not stop talking about this roster this year for Ohio State and how great it is. And again, we know it is a loaded roster with a ton of transfers. They're your favorites in the Big Ten, but not far behind is Oregon. Let's talk about these two teams.
You know, Ohio State probably has the best roster top to bottom, with the exception of a big unknown at quarterback. And I mean best roster in the nation. You know, a couple of years ago, Ohio State's defense had tremendous talent, but their style was to attack at the line of scrimmage. And when it worked, it was brilliant. But if somebody missed a tackle or somebody got blocked and the ball carrier just squeezed through, or if a receiver was able to break one tackle on a short pass, there was no Buckeye left behind to stop a jailbreak. And we saw that against Michigan a couple of years ago, where they just ripped off multiple 40-yard-plus touchdowns against the Buckeyes. Last year, under new coordinator Jim Knowles, they changed emphasis, the Buckeyes did, to from attacking at the line to making sure they didn't give up the big play. And their big play allowed, I mean, you know, 2 years ago, they were one of the worst teams in the nation at giving up plays of 40 yards or more. Last year, they were one of the best in the nation at giving up plays of 40 yards or more, and they cut their points per game allowed way back. And this defense now is going to have full knowledge of this system. They actually have better personnel, especially with the transfer of safety Caleb Downs from Alabama to Ohio State. This defense, if it's not the best in the nation, it'll be one of them. The offensive line should be terrific. The receivers are deep and dynamic. One of the best running back rooms in the nation with the transfer of Quinshon Judkins from Ole Miss to Ohio State. And the question comes down to Will Howard at quarterback. Now, he transferred from Kansas State, and word out of Kansas is that he transferred because he was going to lose his job anyway to Avery Johnson. So he came to Ohio State. Well, the narrative there is, okay, not good enough to win the job at Kansas State, but going to lead Ohio State back to the promised land. Well, maybe he can, maybe he will, but he is, we know, an outstanding running quarterback. He's huge. He's fast. He's tough. His accuracy in the pass is a work in progress. And with Chip Kelly as the new offensive coordinator, here's kind of what I think about Ohio State this year, especially early. I expect their defense to smother everybody. I expect their offense to lean heavily on the run, including the quarterback run. And I expect the passing game to be essentially play action pass, go over the top when safeties come up to try to deal with the run. And therefore, I think the scores are going to be low. You know, I think especially early in the season, as they start to play teams beyond, they've got three egregious cupcakes to start the season. but until the passing game is more than just hit an occasional shot on play action, I think this is going to be a team that will have low-scoring games, be heavily reliant on the run, run the clock, shortened games, and until they start to put up tons of points against quality defenses with a good passing attack, I think that I am inclined just generically to look at the under for Ohio State.
Wow, like that. Are you in? Are you buying in on Lanning, Oregon, Big Ten?
Yeah, Dan Lanning, you know, he's got experience in the SEC, you know, most recently at Georgia. And he's building and has built, really, an SEC-type team in the Pacific Northwest. You know, lines of scrimmage modeled on that kind of a mindset, attitude modeled on that kind of a mindset. And I think Oregon's offense is going to be lights out, but I see them kind of differently when you look at sort of the generic look at what could happen early for Oregon than Ohio State, because their offense pass and run, should come out of the gate just lights out. Dylan Gabriel, a quarterback transferred in from Oklahoma, has got a terrific wide receiver core, deep group of running backs, outstanding offensive line, just like Ohio State, except a proven passer. I mean, Dylan Gabriel could end up becoming the NCAA's leading all-time passer this season. I mean, it's within range, and he's just that good of a thrower, whereas Will Howard at Ohio State hasn't yet proven it. My question for Oregon is the defense. And I haven't heard a lot of people really express a lot of concern, but they have brought in a ton of transfers to replace guys that were big stars for them last year. And a lot of those transfers are outstanding. But like in the secondary, only one key contributor is back. So they brought in a couple and that's a safety. They brought in a couple of transfer corners. They're very good. You know, they lost some key defensive linemen off of last year's team. They brought in a couple of transfers. They've got some young guys they hope are going to step up. But the thing I worry about with the Oregon defense, especially in the first half of the season or so, until some of those young guys in rotation show that they can come in and give real quality performance in a Big Ten competition, I worry that they're going to wear down. I worry that the starters will be fine and the backups will need some time to develop. And if that's the case, then you can get away with it in the Pac-12. But in the Big Ten, you can't. Because in the Big Ten, much like the SEC, they're bigger and stronger and have a different mindset, you know, coming right downhill at you. So whereas for Ohio State, just sort of generically, I'm thinking lean to the under. I'm thinking for the same reason, mirror image, lean to the over on Oregon. Because I think they're going to want to score a ton of points. But I think they have to worry about outscoring some of the better teams that they play. And I'll tell you what, unlike Ohio State, who has three cupcakes to start the season, Oregon starts with Idaho, but then they've got Boise State, who has a very good chance of being the group of five representative in the playoff. I mean, they're loaded this year when they have one of the best running backs in the country. I mean, this is a very good Boise State team. And then game three, they are at Oregon State for the rivalry game. So, you know, we're going to learn a lot about the quality and depth of that defensive line early in the season.
Trevor, we really do appreciate the leans as well. Look, we're getting started tomorrow. We're going to be watching you all year on ESPN to do an amazing job. Trevor Maddich, you can find Trevor on Twitter at TMaddich. Thank you for the time today, Trevor. We'll be watching.
It's great to talk with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hey, ask him about a team and let him run. Progressive guest line, Trevor Maddich. I've got more notes. I'll tell you what he said in his notes when we come back, because he's got some interesting thoughts, particularly on a dark horse playoff contender. It's not the South Carolina Gamecocks.
Oh, it's definitely not.
No. It's not Donkey Ball with Beamer. We're back, and we'll continue to run the Week 3 board as far as the NFL. Sharp Money, VSiN, the sports. Oh no, Dustin, I dropped my earpiece. So what I'll do is, I can't hear you, but here's what I know. He's Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. This is VSiN, the sports betting network. We've got Mike Somich coming up in about 12 minutes. If you're going to talk, I'm not going to be able to hear you. I'll try to read your lips. We've been working together for a long time, not much longer, but a long time, and I can read your lips. Now, a couple of things. One, I'm going to tell you that Trevor Maddich, we just had on ESPN, I had questions I wanted to ask him, but I asked my guy about Florida State, Oregon, and Ohio State, and he ripped through 12 minutes like he was taking a bath. You understand? I mean, it was easy for him. I heard, and now it's been a slow time for the Hokies. It's been a rough, lean few years for the Hokies and Virginia Tech. One thing I will say is they dodged a bullet when they didn't hire Shane Beamer to follow, you know, because Beamer was in the mix. They didn't hire, his dad's a legend. They're at Virginia Tech. They didn't hire him, which is probably pretty good. But they kind of went under the radar with Brent Pry. Wasn't a name, but I heard just earlier today, Brent Pry, who is the Virginia Tech head coach, on with the Junkies in D.C. And I got to be honest with you, he was fired up and got me fired up about this year for Virginia Tech. And I bring that up because in Trevor Maddich's notes, he has, as far as a dark horse playoff contender, Virginia Tech. Big guy.
Okay. And if you like that, then you should like Kyren Drones, their quarterback, to be a dark horse contender for the Heisman Trophy, because a lot of the hype when it comes to the Hokies hinges on Kyren Drones and what he did a year ago. 2,000 passing yards, 17 touchdowns to just 3 interceptions. Also super mobile. Originally started at Baylor, now at Virginia Tech. Ran for 642 yards and 4 scores as well a year ago. So if you're going to be high on Virginia Tech as a potential team to win the ACC, as a team that can sneak into the playoff here, it's going to be because Kyren Drones is a Heisman candidate as well. So if you're going to align on one, I would align on the other.
Okay, and I can hear you now, thank God. So I thought that was a tremendous breakdown. Thank you for picking me up there. Speaking of Virginia Tech, if you missed yesterday's Sharp Money program, like our buddy Mark who emailed the show, if you missed the program, during the show, I received a telephone call from Virginia Tech legend Michael Vick telling me that he's got a promo to offer me at a book. That was pretty cool. Next one that I wanted to pass along to you from Trevor Maddich. Iowa State, underrated. Now, we had Scott Spreitzer in on Wednesday. There is a lot of Iowa State love in the market right now.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it's Rocco Becht. Matt Campbell's had this weird thing. I can't remember.
He's been underwhelming.
Did you like him at first? Because I used to, when Matt Campbell was at Toledo, I loved him. And then he got this big gig at Iowa State, and he was supposed to be the next guy. There were rumors he was going to be the next Cowboys head coach at one point.
Bro, do you know that Dan Campbell's introductory presser for the Lions, he literally made a joke that I know you're talking to the wrong Campbell because the Detroit Lions tried to hire Matt Campbell and then settled on Dan Campbell, and now his star has fallen. However, this year, 7.5 on the Cyclones, and a lot is expected.
Yeah, look, I thought that Matt Campbell was a good coach. I really did. It's been really underwhelming. You're right. But Rocco Becht does inject a little bit of life. Got experience a year ago. But the key for them is not so much how good they are, but how wide open the Big 12 is. I think you can make a strong case for like 5 teams in the Big 12 to win the league. So because of that, because it's wide open, because they've experienced a quarterback, I really like an opportunity here for Iowa State where, you know, a few years back, they had a really loaded team and they fell short, right? They had Purdy. They had Breece Hall. Charlie Kolar at tight end. Like, they were a loaded roster. So there are windows where Matt Campbell's had NFL pieces there in Ames. It's just a question of if it all comes together this year in a wide open Big 12.
I'm going to name, and then you stop me. Who's texting you?
Prime member deals. The rookie season 5 is available now. I don't know what the rookie is.
Okay. I'm going to start listing off names that I think you can back in the Big 12. And you stop me when I come to the first name and first team you don't respect.
Got it.
Obviously you can back Utah to win the Big 12.
Yeah. But here's what I'd say about Utah. Everyone on this network pumps up Utah every year. And every year Utah comes up one game short.
Because everybody at this network went to Utah and then played for the Dallas Cowboys. Or Notre Dame.
Yeah, fair.
Okay. Yeah, in the Big 12, I can make a case for Utah. I can make a case for Kansas State.
I love Kansas State.
I can make a case for Oklahoma State.
Absolutely.
I can make a case for UCF.
I think you absolutely can.
I'm not joking. Because of the coach, it can make a case for Kansas.
Well, and I'd say the quarterback as well, as long as he's healthy. See, the problem is getting him on the field, but when he's there, Jalen Daniels, he's awesome.
He always injured. Yeah. I can make a case for Iowa State.
I agree.
Can I make a case for Arizona?
So here's why you can. There's a lot of people high in Arizona. What I'd say about the Wildcats this year, obviously a coaching change. But when you return a quarterback, and I always say his name wrong, Fifita. Noah Fifita.
Oh, he's spectacular.
And a stud number one receiver, as long as if the defense stinks and you're in shootouts every week, because you have that offensive capabilities, I do think, like, Arizona's going to be a team that contends. I don't know if they win the Big 12, but they can be in this conversation.
The Arizona quarterback, which I always pronounce his name incorrectly Fafita. As well, he is spectacular. He is so much fun to watch.
But how much of that was Jed Fish? That's what I want.
And Brent Brennan, San Jose State, I believe, prior,
very
won
good.
A lot of football games for many years.
Very
He's
good.
A very good coach.
Did more with less. By the way, I'm backing a coach this weekend in week zero, known for doing more with less. More on that later.
Okay. So, hold on. I just got to pull up. So,
yeah,
I said
Tech.
You can make a case for the Big 12. Hold on. Utah, Kansas State. You see, you did the thing where you have to spoil it. Oklahoma State, UCF, Kansas, Iowa State, Arizona. And then I think we end it. I think you can make a case with Texas Tech. And I think that's it. But
no,
that would make
no,
it 1, 2, 3, 4.
No,
1, 2, 3, 4. No. That would make it 8 teams.
I think West Virginia's in the mix, too.
Oh, snap. 18-1. Big 12.
Believe West Virginia is catching 10.5. I don't know if it's neutral or home game week one against Penn State. I don't care. I'm backing West Virginia against Donk James Franklin. Neil Brown's got something cooking. I think he knows he's under the radar. I think they finally have a little bit of continuity. The talk in the offseason wasn't his contract. It was just football this past year. Because of that, I think things are trending in the right direction for the Mountaineers. And because, again, the league is so wide open, I think West Virginia is a sneaky team here.
I'm going to say something maybe a little controversial. I think Brennan might be an upgrade at Arizona at head coach.
Ooh.
He was awesome at San Jose State.
Dude, Jed Fish was awesome last year. But I get what you're saying.
Sometimes you just got to coach ball. There's a lot going on with Jed Fish.
I'll say it's not a downgrade.
Okay. And then I think we would stop there because then you start getting into the TCUs in Colorado. Colorado, I'm telling you people, careful. Careful.
Haters.
That's all I'm saying.
Haters.
I don't trust Dion.
Oh, next, he seems so trustworthy.
Next note. So here's Trevor Maddich. He said, Iowa State underrated. Virginia Tech is a dark horse playoff contender. Texas A&M is going to be tough.
Oh, he's speaking my language with Texas A&M is going to be tough. His exact text to me was, nobody wants to play Texas A&M, and I think he's spot on. I think that defense is going to be crazy. Elko knows what he's doing on that side of the ball. Wegman returns at quarterback for them. You look at what they did in the transfer portal. Only Ole Miss had a higher rating when it came to the transfer season this year. Receiver-wise, they return a lot of guys. Moose Muhammad III, the lead guy there. This team is going to be awesome. They brought in some pieces on defense. A guy from Purdue at linebacker, and Nick Scourton, led the Big Ten in sacks a year ago. They have a freshman All-American, Torian York. He's already a team captain. Shamar Turner at D-tackle is a legit first-round NFL prospect. Absolutely loaded defense. They're super physical. New DC from Florida and Jay Bateman. Colin Klein comes from Kansas State. A&M is going
right,
to be a
all right, take
monster.
It easy, bro. I mean, you're literally reading the roster to me. I checked out halfway through.
Yeah, but some people,
I'm not mad at you. I'm just saying, just don't read me the roster.
That's on you. That's not on me.
I can pull up their roster and read it as well.
Yeah, but I have points about these people.
Okay, fine, whatever. I don't care. I'll make you happy now because Maddich loves Jackson Dart Heisman. And so do you.
Yeah, I do. It's trendy, and I still stand by it.
But I'm complimenting you. You were ahead of it before it became trendy.
Yeah, I just didn't want to say too much there because I didn't know what I was allowed to do.
Well, there's 3 seconds left until Samich.